Welcome to the Canadian Real Estate Investor, where hosts Daniel Foch and Nick Hill navigate the market and provide the tools and insights to build your real estate portfolio.
Welcome back to another episode of the Canadian Real Estate Investor, your favorite real estate podcast for all things Canadian.
I know it's your favorite real estate podcast.
Yeah, well, I mean, slight bias, but my name is Nick Hill. I'm joined by Daniel Foch, and today we are covering the housing supply report that CMHC just released. You may be asking, what is the housing supply report?
I'm personally not asking. I know what it is, but I can tell our audience what it is.
That would be great.
It aims to provide regular insights on new housing supply in Canada's major cities and urban areas. These insights position supply as an important element in efforts to advance housing affordability. What you'll find in this report is CMHC examines new housing construction trends in Canada's six largest CMAs, or census metropolitan areas. And as you know, we've talked about this a couple times on the show. Supply is pretty important. A lot of people say, you know, population growth is the demand curve. This is why real estate is so bullish. Well, it isn't if supply is outgrowing it. That's obviously not happening right now. And we did a whole episode on the Fraser Institute. They had a report that showed like how the supply demand imbalances province by province to see, like, I think most people would say the gap between supply and demand is the bull case for Canadian real estate. So understanding where that is the worst is important from my perspective.
Exactly. And I was always confused because I thought it was supply and command.
No, yeah.
Here,
no.
But
no.
Founding economic.
Command and conquer is
that's
the,
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something like that.
It was
that.
A video game, I think, wasn't it?
As Dan said, the CMAs, Canada's six largest CMAs, which is essentially just city centers, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto, and Ottawa. And of course, we cannot forget Montreal. Is that okay pronunciation?
Montreal.
Montreal, damn it. CMHC examines trends within and across those markets using analysis themes such as housing starts in 2023, and by housing type, both pretty important stats. Government programs aimed at increasing rent supply and prolonged construction timelines caused by various supply side challenges. So a lot of the stuff we've been talking about neatly packaged in this lovely report by CMHC.
Yeah. And if you listen to our episode with Housing Minister Sean Fraser and Shadow Housing Minister Scott Aitchison, they both discuss how they're watching housing starts very closely as an indicator of whether or not housing affordability and the housing crisis is going to improve.
As they should be. Pretty important.
So, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so some of the highlights from the report are in 2023, housing starts in the six largest CMAs combined remained stable. Notable increases in the apartment segment, purpose-built rental, and condominium were offset by declines in ground-oriented types, so single detached, semi-detached, and row homes. Single detached starts registered the most significant decline of 20%.
Yikes.
Yeah. In Toronto, Vancouver, Calgary, and Ottawa, apartment construction, purpose-built rental, and condo reached record levels. Conversely, apartment construction in Montreal hit an eight-year low. Purpose-built rental units accounted for a greater proportion of apartment starts compared to historical averages.
Yeah, the high number of rental apartment starts in 2023 reflected an unprecedented level of rental demand. Remember when unprecedented was like the word of the year? Man, that was the worst.
Unprecedented use of the word unprecedented.
And here we are still seeing it years later. However, ongoing challenges on the supply side suggest that demand will continue to outpace the supply. No real surprise there. If you've listened to the show or kept up with any news, we know the gap there is massive. So record condominium apartment starts reflected robust pre-sale activity and favorable borrowing rates secured before 2023. We expect condominium apartment starts to moderate in 2024 to reflect the current demand conditions and financial challenges. Now, ground-oriented homes, especially single detached properties, have become increasingly unaffordable for buyers. Because guess what? That's kind of what everyone wants, right? That's the Canadian dream, the single detached home with the white picket fence. The share of the construction accounted for by single detached homes reached a record low and is expected to remain low in the near term. Now, the supply barriers stem from rising costs, growing project sizes, labor shortages, and these have all resulted in extended construction timelines. Now, various levels of government have implemented or announced new programs, which we have discussed in multiple episodes. And we actually had the two most important people for housing, the Minister of Housing and the Shadow Minister, on to discuss that as well, to discuss these, you know, programs meant to stimulate the supply of new rental housing. And there was a high uptake in use of these programs by developers. Thankfully, those are the exact people that should be using them, whether the large scale, the mid cap, and now we're seeing more citizen developers, right? The smaller scale, you guys that listen to this podcast that are being incentivized to take part in the rebuilding of Canada's housing stock right here. So Dan, hit me with this first chart here. You're Mr. Chart, so I thought I'd get you going on this one.
Yeah, so the heading above the chart says total housing starts in the six largest CMAs remained near an all-time high over the last 3 years. Total new home construction in the six largest census metropolitan areas, or CMAs, measured by housing starts, has stabilized around 140,000 units. Despite a relatively stable overall number in recent years, housing starts have shown different trends across markets and types of construction. In 2023, housing starts in these six CMAs dipped by just a half a percentage point, or 50 basis points, if I'm putting my monocle and top hat on.
Yeah. Wow, you really know what you're talking about.
Oh, big smart guy over here. compared to 2022, totaling just shy of 140,000 units.
So really a nominal amount. We're talking like
137,000,
just over 2,000 of a difference. So apartment starts surged by 7%, reaching a record high of just under 99,000 units. However, this increase was offset by a decline in the construction of those ground-oriented homes, the single detached ones that we were just talking about. Those starts dropped by 20%. So we're seeing a big uptick on one side of things, but a massive downside in others.
Yeah, so probably worthwhile context here. Like, a lot of this could be the way that houses are sold, right? So like, if you buy a detached house, it's usually going to be built within 1 or 2 years of you purchasing it. If you buy a condo, it would end up being built within 6 years, right? Because it takes a long time to build a condo. Yeah. Like, just, you know, you can build a house in, I don't know, I mean, really, if you put a whole crew on building a house, you can get it done in a couple of months, honestly, right?
Whereas we haven't figured out how to
do it. No matter how hard you try, you cannot build it in 6 months. And so what happens is, you know, these condos pre-sell. So you look at the big bumps in the pre-sales. Right now we're at record low pre-sales. We're 75% below the 8-year average on pre-sales right now. And that came from my most recent report, but Alex Exelon on Twitter, who's awesome. Yeah, he has a Substack. I think his Substack is going to be monetized soon. So
it is, I think, already. It is already. He just announced it last time I was on. Yeah. Worth a couple bucks.
Yeah, I'll pay for it. I don't even care what it costs. Yeah. But but yeah, I mean, if you're following Toronto real estate, he's a definitely worthwhile analyst to be I following and paying for his stuff. But anyway, in 2020, 2021, those are two record years of pre-construction sales. And so you're just getting all of those condos that were sold during those years are just starting to be built, and they're just starting to show up as. So last couple of years, we had record starts and record completions in the high-rise space. But the ground-based stuff, it shuts off, the tap shuts off very quickly. So it's just more responsive to demand.
Yeah.
So just worth noting.
Like, no, 100%. Really kind of puts things in perspective, because again, sometimes the data can be misleading without those, you know, anecdotal explanations behind it. So appreciate it as always, Dan. Now, again, going back to some of the main CMAs here, Toronto, Vancouver, and Calgary saw growth in their total starts numbers, with new apartment construction reaching record highs in these CMAs. Conversely, in Ottawa, Edmonton, and Montreal.
Yeah.
Do that okay? Yeah. Apartment starts in 2023 weren't high enough to cause increases in total starts. Montreal stood out as the only market that recorded a significant decline across all of those housing types.
The R is like, you have to, there's like a scratchy sound you got to make with the R. Nora, my daughter, she shows me that all the time because she's French immersion.
Montreal.
I can't do it. I'll practice it and then I'll try it next time we're on the show.
Everyone in Quebec listening right now is just shaking their head at me. I apologize. Well,
when you tried to pronounce that Trois-Rivières. It was like Trois-Rivières. Like, okay.
That's the comic relief part of the show.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. It's called, I just give Nick all the French lines. So that's
it's really unfortunate. It's not fair.
Yeah, that's good. CMHC used a measure that adjusts for population size to increase the depth of cross-market comparisons. So you're not saying like, oh, you know, Toronto obviously had tons of starts. Well, yeah, because it's got tons of people.
And we talk about this a lot, right?
Yeah.
The addition, even with interprovincial migration or migration or whatever it is, right? You have 100 people show up in Toronto, drop in the bucket, whereas you have 100 people show up in Moose Jaw, you might notice.
Yeah. And so what they use is starts per 1,000 people. So although housing starts in Calgary weren't, so it's basically per capita.
Yeah.
Although housing starts in Calgary weren't the highest among the six CMAs, when adjusted for population size, they were the highest at 11.7 units per 1,000 population. In Toronto, where the absolute number of starts was the highest among six CMAs, starts per 1,000 population were the second lowest.
What do you make of that? Like, I mean, we're seeing Calgary rip, right? We've been saying this for a while. I just was having a conversation with someone else the other day and they were like telling me how fired up they were about Calgary. And I was like, I think you're late.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, it does seem a little bit overbought, and we've been saying on the show for a while, like the last time we looked at this report, it showed that Calgary, like, well, the Prairies are basically really good at building stuff. And so they can respond to demand a lot quicker. And that shows on this graph, which, by the way, we have a YouTube for those of you. I think like our goal is really to get people off of YouTube onto the audio platform, because I think we're pretty good at creating audio. But if you want a more audio companion, I'm actually screen sharing this report right now, or sorry, a more video companion. And what we're thinking about doing is actually maybe just like we'll start doing like a newsletter companion for each episode that it comes out with like a link. So if you want to, we'll put the link for the Substack that we had. It was the same one as before, but just start driving more people there. If you want to give us your email and subscribe to that, we'll put that in the notes, and I'll send one out with all the screenshots that we used in this episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's the question now, Nick?
Yeah. I mean, the question is, you know, in a world where it's so hard to get deals or projects to pencil out, what type of product is being built? We know there's a huge push for purpose-built rental stock. That's purpose-built rentals, not Pabst Blue Ribbon, often confused. And trust me, you know, Dan and I are on the front lines of this stuff. I've never seen so many deals fall apart on our side of the business when I've talked to other brokers, debt brokers, developers, multifamily owners, novice investors, veteran investors. The story is all the same. Rental construction shares exceeded historical averages across all CMAs. Well, there have been significant shifts in the types of dwellings being built. The changes in tenure were equally important. Purpose-built rental construction in the six CMAs combined to hit record levels in 2023, significantly boosting overall starts. Whereas Montreal and Edmonton experienced declines, nonetheless, rental construction in Edmonton remained historically high in 2023.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember when I was recording the CMHC's rental market report, I did a recording of it for the course for realist.ca, which, by the way, we have a webinar coming up May 8th on, just go realist.ca/webinar, free webinar.
About in the show notes. Check it out.
In the show notes.
You also get to join our free school group when you go and sign up for that webinar.
Good community. Interact with us, some other listeners on the show, et cetera. Anyway, when I was going through the rental market report, I noticed like in Edmonton as a landlord, you're almost competing with homeownership. Like that would be your biggest competitor as a landlord. And so it kind of has made it like a more interesting tenant pool. But that seems to be changing a little bit as Edmonton becomes sufficiently unaffordable that like rental is like becoming a primary tenure type. So anyway.
Well, when I was talking to that same person about Calgary, I said that, you know, where did everyone from Ontario and Vancouver go? They went to Calgary. Mm-hmm. Now people in Calgary that have been investing there are like, okay, well, everyone from Toronto and Vancouver ruined this. So what do? They drive either to Red Deer or they keep going right up to Edmonton. Now, let me be very, very clear. This is not to say that you can't find, there's probably people doing great deals in Edmonton right now, great deals in Calgary right now. We know many of them. Mm-hmm. We've taught some of them. We interact with some of them. We've helped some of them do deals. Not saying you can't find deals in Calgary. Okay, let me be very clear. You can still find deals in Toronto. We know people doing that too, but it's a lot harder to get them done. That's all we're getting at.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. You just have, like, I think it's just not, they're less opportune markets, right? Like they're really, you need to be careful and skilled. And when there's less opportunities, there's more risk, right? And there's more work and there's more risk. Like you can cash flow any deal if you're going to make it your job, you know?
I sure hope so.
Yeah. In recent years, purpose-built rentals have constituted a larger share of apartments breaking ground, averaging 42% in 2023.
Huge.
In Edmonton, the share is 80%, was the highest among the six biggest CMAs in Canada, significantly exceeding the past 10-year average. In Toronto, where condominium apartments still dominate, the rental share increased to over a quarter, which is actually wild in Toronto because it is very tough to make a purpose-built rental building of that scale pencil in the city of Toronto. It is also worth noting that like most condos, well, two-fifths of condos end up in the rental housing stock anyway, right? So, which I actually thought it would be higher than that, but that's what the data says. So two in every five condos actually ends up being owned by an investor. So you've got 25% of all apartments being built as purpose-built rental and then another almost 50% of the remaining. So it's probably greater than half. I don't know. I have to do some math on that. My math's probably off there. Anyway, a lot of it ends up in the rental stock.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, through one channel or another, exactly, Dan. Now, we've got a interesting graphic here, Dan. Do you want to opine on this a little bit before we keep moving?
So it says rentals share of apartment starts in the last 10 years, selected CMAs. And I guess it's gone from 2014 in Vancouver to from 24% to 37%. In Calgary from 10% to 54%.
Crazy.
Yeah. In Edmonton from 48% to 80%.
Again, big, big numbers.
Yeah.
Like to see that.
In Toronto, 12 to 26%. In Ottawa, 28 to 49%, just shy of 50%. And in Montreal, 26% to 71%. So you're seeing doubling, tripling, more than 5x in some places. So obviously apartment, purpose-built rental apartment are beginning to dominate that category. It seems like these CMHC lending programs like MLI Select and then like the ACLP program that the government, which used to be the RCFI, a lot of these direct lending programs are starting to work, which we talked a lot about in past episodes when we talked about like the days of yore where they were built, you know, building hundreds of thousands of units in like the 70s with the MURB program. We're starting to get back towards that. Like it seems like all the policy measures that the government is actually putting in right now are working. It just takes a really long time to create real estate, and that sucks for them because they need to win an election. Like I'm presuming their objective of doing a lot of this stuff is to try and get reelected.
Likely.
Because I think people aren't super happy with them right now. Yeah. So, you know, they got to figure out how to make real estate construction faster, which I think they've been doing. They've been talking about like industrialization, et cetera.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Dan, you and I have read all that stuff. We've listened to all that stuff and, you know, put the rhetoric and the propaganda and even the politics aside. It really comes down to, you know, this is getting off script a little bit here, but it really comes down to a few things. It's taken, and this is the thing that hits home for me. It's taken a long time to get this screwed up. And it's going to take a long time to get unscrewed from the situation we're in, right? It's not like in every panel that we, you know, that you're on or that I'm on or every time one of us, the question always comes up, okay, well, if you could do, even with Gregor Craigie, we were just at his book signing. We had him on the podcast a couple months ago. It's what are the, you know, if you could change one thing or if you could do one major thing, a sweeping change that would affect the industry, what would it be? Well, the answer is there's no one thing.
There is one thing, to be honest with you, but it comes with a very bad consequence. Like you could easily shut off the demand, like easily, and be like, oh, Canadian population's not growing anymore.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, wait, the Canadian population's not growing.
Without shooting ourselves in the foot, we still need to walk. We're already limping here. Yeah. But without shooting ourselves in the foot, there really isn't one thing. And what I'm getting at is that there isn't one thing. There's 30 things, right? And we've We've been covering them in episodes for almost 2 years now. Everything from cutting the red tape to bringing in more skilled labor to changing like all these little things in the mortgage industry, an episode that we just did, right? It's going to be all those little incremental changes that we see. And going back to the share of rental starts in the last 10 years, you know, outside of Vancouver, which really only went up like 13-14%, you're right, we're seeing a double, triple, quadrupling of
Calgary was start. More than quadruple.
That's awesome. Sorry,
yeah. More than 5x.
More than 5x, right?
So I mean, quintuple, yeah.
It's awesome. So anyways, you know, one of the main issues that we are facing are rising construction costs. And the CMHC report here does a really good explanation of three factors that help explain rising construction costs and rising timelines associated with construction as well. The first one is, I'll do the first two here, Dan, and you jump in for the third. So The first one is larger projects, right? Larger project sizes. Projects are getting bigger. Neighborhoods are getting more complex, and that's contributed to longer construction timeframes for apartments in specifically Toronto, where they're needed the most. Conversely, in Calgary and Edmonton, where smaller size stacked townhomes make up a larger share of the apartment market, completion times were shorter. Now, we've literally done so many episodes on red tape, the permitting application, the zoning, just how long it takes to get some of this stuff done. And we know this has been a huge problem. Another issue are rising construction costs. Growth in construction costs in the six largest CMAs slowed significantly in 2023 compared to 2022. Stats Canada Building Construction Price Index decelerated from 18.6% in 2022 down to 5.4% in 2023. However, regional differences have gotten bigger, with cost increases remaining high in some areas in Ottawa, Montreal, Calgary, and Edmonton. The Building Construction Price Index increased by 2% to 4%. Meanwhile, in Toronto and Vancouver, the index in 2023 was still rising strongly by 13 and 8% respectively. So since 2022 and into 2023, higher costs have made some projects economically unfeasible. Again, Dan, no surprise to us. We deal with this in our personal and professional lives when we're helping clients and looking for deals ourselves. And consequently, delays have happened at all stages of construction, including project launches, starts, and completion. So just really a barrage of challenges for the construction industry to overcome. Now, Dan, hit me with the third main challenge.
I'm a DIYer for sure. Yeah.
You know, I've seen a couple of your DIY projects.
I know. So I really pushed the limit recently because I DIYed a skylight. So Hopefully it doesn't also come with a waterfall feature. the thing was, it's like, I got a quote for three skylights and it was like $12,000 and then I'm like, all right, I'm doing it myself, I guess. I'll send you an invoice for my back pain after I fall off the roof. Anyway, I'm just I was talking to Joey's going to come on the show, by the way, contractor in the GTA, Greater Golden Horseshoe, expert in the ADU space, building garden suites. Well, he's not yet, because nobody really is. People say they are. They've done like 5-10 projects because there's like 20 of them built. But
I did meet a guy at the Windsor meetup, which was awesome, by the way. Shout out to everyone that came out to the Windsor meetup. So much fun. I absolutely crushed Dan on the on the numbers.
Actually, you know what? It's a shame because a lot of people came from social media, and there was one guy I wanted to give him a shout out. His name's Dan as well.
Of course.
There was two guys who came from from listening to the show. One was a student, and the other one was this guy who works in the mines. Not in the mines, but he works in the mining industry up there. I think he's a millwright, actually, Dan. Shout out to Dan, who came to visit at Sudbury. I wish I had a more chance to talk to you. It is crazy how you just get immersed in conversations, right? And then things wrap up and you're like, oh, I guess I got a roll. But Sudbury was good. It was one of those more intimate ones. I think we had like 20-something people at the Sudbury meetup. And anyway, I appreciate everyone who came from listening to the show, because I think a lot of people just came from social media. But for those of you who are listening right now, thanks for coming to the Sudbury meetup. Please continue to go to meetups, do deals, help grow the community. Sudbury, sponsored by Zach, who runs a property management company up there, and Tristan, who's one of our, he's our Sudbury expert on the realist.ca course as well. So a real estate broker and a property manager.
Yeah. Similar to the, Josh and Russell of Lalovich Real Estate, who do a killer job down there. And I just want to give a quick shout out to Savio, who actually a realtor, investor, guy had a great story, moved from, like, lived in Oakville, did a bunch of work in Toronto, went down to Windsor to start investing, realized that was really great, a hell of a lot better than his current environment. Guess what? Picked up the wife and kids, moved down to Windsor, and has since been crushing it down there. Guy has completed over 40 garden suites, 40 of them.
So he might have the record.
So he might have. That's why I told him. I was like, man, congratulations. That's more than I've heard anyone else. So
honestly, it might be the most.
Yeah,
it really might be.
Like, and he's agreed to either come on the show or jump on realist.ca and talk about EDU. So
cool. Yeah, Joey wants to do the same thing, more GTA oriented, obviously. So yeah. Maybe we'll have to have both on. They can argue about where the where the best market is to do the ADUs. Anyway. Okay, so the last piece on this report is worker shortage amid rising construction volumes. And actually, there's a chart, growth in construction costs. Just it corresponds to what you were just talking about, but that'll be in the newsletter that we'll send out with this episode as well. Worker shortage amid rising construction volumes. The construction industry has been struggling with a growing labor shortage in recent years. And this is something actually, well, you know, Ryan Clark, who's a friend of the show. It's funny when I introduced him to the Sherwin guys, because we're thinking about doing this report about this labor shortage. And he was like, how do we get called friends of the show? And I was like, you are friends of Sherwin-Williams. did we mention already this episode, or was that last episode?
I think it was the last one, but yeah, Sherwin-Williams.
They sponsor our meetups and they're advertisers on the show. We really appreciate them. So make sure you show up to one of our meetups and get some free Sherwin-Williams swag and talk to their reps. They have an awesome program for investors and for real estate professionals, like realtors who paint houses a lot, like when they're going to list them for sale. So
put it this way, if you are involved in real estate, you need paint.
It's literally that simple. Yeah. Well, it is the highest ROI investment renovation you can do is painting, right?
Especially over the light switches, the outlets, everything.
Just got to go paint over everything. Yeah. This paint has great grab. It'll stick to literally anything.
Okay, let's get back on track.
Yeah, so the third challenge is this worker shortage. So anyway, the point is we were talking about maybe doing a report about this labor shortage. I think that this is changing a little bit. Like, you're starting to see that guy who we wanted to have on the show that did the TikTok, the framer, remember?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, there's no houses being framed. But that kind of goes back to the beginning of this, where it's like, well, that's low rise work. So yeah, that would suck for framers. But high rises are still, like, anyone I know who's working in high rise, a guy I work out with every day, they're working on slab and he's doing, you know, buildings that are like, cause the pipeline's full for 3 to 4 years with the high rise stuff. Right. So anybody on the concrete side is fine. Anybody who's doing ground-based stuff is having a harder time.
Well, I mean, we're seeing it right here in the data, right? I mean, 20% fall off in single detached, right? That's what a lot of those like balloon frame, stick frame guys are doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need roof trusses on a 40-story building.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, trust, I guess like there are guys
that I saw a truss on the back of a truck and I was like, trust me, that'd be a great roof truss company. So anyone else to take that, go ahead. Just give me some credit. Trust me.
Truss issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's move on to the construction costs, which.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you said, right, construction costs are a major issue, but time is really a big issue here too, right? I mean, if we could build houses a hell of a lot faster, we would likely get out of this issue that we find ourselves in, this little pickle called a housing crisis, a lot faster as well. So can think about construction times from foundation to occupancy. Now, obviously, that varies by housing type and location, depending on weather. We've got a lot of different climates across this country.
You have to account for people burning the houses down.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, that should be a line item on the Gantt chart. Accidental rebuild. Fire. So the overall development process is more extensive and includes planning, approvals, and pre-sale stages. Factors like a project size and complexity, as well as regulations and the cost and availability of labor and materials, all influence the length of construction. The average construction time in the six largest CMAs has been on the rise over the last few years, reaching 18.8 months in 2023. The average construction time for a single detached home reached 10.7 months in 2023. In Toronto and Vancouver, this figure was 13.8 and 14.5 months, respectively. For apartment projects, the average construction time was 22.7 months, with Toronto and Vancouver having the longest times at 33.3 and 26.4 months, respectively. Dan, what do your chart eyes see?
Yeah, so you pretty much just summarized all of it in the language from the report, but they don't break it up over product type. So I won't go through all the different cities again, but they have single detached, semi-detached, row, and apartment. And this goes back to what we were saying. So average construction time in months by dwelling type. And the 2023 average for single detached was 10.7 months. For semi-detached, 10.7 months. For a row house, 12.8 months. And for an apartment, 22.7 months. So
wow.
Double. Yeah, it's double what it takes to build a single detached house, more than double what it takes to build a single detached house or a semi-detached house. This is obviously why you're seeing that kind of like the, again, I mentioned the ground-based stuff is way more responsive and these apartments aren't responding as quickly to the changes in supply and demand because they're still building stuff that sold in 2020, 2021 at record prices and just hoping people close on those units. Honestly, like that's kind of where we're at right now. Whereas, you know, if you're running a sales office and the demand just shuts off on a ground base, you're kind of just like, okay, I guess we're not building these houses there was a little bit of a period last year where there was a bunch of people who bought and the houses were under construction and they were incentivized to burn those houses down. Like, honestly, that was a crazy period of time. No,
it was like 6 months and there was like random fires.
Flynn was like, had a really good chart going of like, I was going to try and do one where it was actually just like a flame, like a chart that was like, you know what I mean? Going
on. Not too late.
Hopefully people are done burning these things down.
I know, but that was like a crazy period of time.
Stop burning houses down.
It's not cool, guys.
Not a good pre-construction investment strategy.
No, it's not a good anything buy, strategy.
Burn. It's the
buy, burn, rebuild.
Buy again. Yeah. Buy, burn, build.
Okay. Now let's kind of finish things off here with a bit of a positive note, which feels weird to say because we don't get to do that often these days on the show, unfortunately. The CMHC report finishes off. Now, obviously, it's much longer than Dan and I have done here, so I encourage everyone to go check it out. As always, lots of great data in here. But they do finish it off by going through some of the major steps in the right direction that we've seen. And the first one is seed funding, which are interest-free loans and non-repayable contributions to develop and preserve housing projects that contain a minimum of 5 affordable units. So a big push for affordability here. And essentially, sounds like you get some free money if you play by the rules. Dan, what is the next one? Because this one is pretty big. And I know you specifically have done a lot of talking about this one.
Yeah, so the RCFI, which has now been changed to the Apartment Construction Loan Program, or ACLP, which sounds like kind of like the ACLU. It's, you know what I mean? Which is like those vigilante lawyers in the US, I think is what it is.
Basically what it's turning into.
Yeah. So the largest program in the government's national housing strategy is RCFI. It provides low cost loans. And this is where the government's directly lending to you. So MLI Select is where MLI just stands for mortgage loan insurance. MLI Select is where they insure loans and the bank lends the money. And so the bank is able to reduce the rate because it's insured and there's no risk, less risk, let's say. RCFI is where the government directly would lend that to you. And so we haven't really done any of these deals because there's no broker channel for it.
Barely recent.
Yeah, but we have been speaking with, Nia, who's in our course. Shout out to Nia. He one of the reviews we read on the thing, it was like one of my favorite reviews, actually. It was awesome.
He's a great guy.
Awesome really guy. Sharp. So I had a chat with him yesterday on the phone about this because he was like, how do we, so he's a grant writer and he's an amazing
expert grant writer. Space. Very, like, very awesome. Cool occupation.
And so he was really attracted to the seed fund funding concept and reached out to me about it. And, you know, we want to do some work. He's in our course and he's doing a lot of like, you know, having a lot of discussions with other people in the course about this program. And I said, well, your skill set would be so scalable to this RCFI or now ACLP program where you can, you know, provide almost advisory work to that, because he's done a lot of these CMHC grants and stuff like that. So we're looking into it to see if there's a way that we can help our listeners and almost build a little bit of like a channel to like connect them with those loans. Because as we heard in the episode that we did with the housing minister, you know, they just added $15 billion in funding to that. And there's a lot of new things that they're going to be doing. Like as an example, the one where they mentioned that stood out to me was building houses on top of existing retail, yeah. Right? Like, you know, every strip mall just became a development opportunity, right? Like really. And you better believe I reached out to strip mall guy about it.
Yes.
Who I'm going to his thing on the 25th.
Too, the legend. So. I can't wait to hear about that. Yeah, you'll have to do an episode on that. I'll interview you for that episode.
Yeah. Okay. That'd be cool.
So yeah. So anything else, Dan, the additional $15 billion, I think that starts next year, right? It goes 2025, 2026.
The $15 billion's for this year. Yeah.
It is. Okay.
Yeah. MLI, I think, is the next piece.
Yeah, so the next one that they're patting themselves on the back for, which I will allow Dan briefly touching it, mortgage loan insurance. If you listen to the show, you've heard it come up once or twice. This is what we help developers achieve at Land Bank as well, which is our debt brokerage. The new multi-unit mortgage loan insurance program from CMHC was introduced back in March of 2022, and it uses a point system to offer insurance incentives based on three categories: affordability, energy efficiency, and accessibility. The incentives are available for new rental construction, also available on takeout. And if you want more information on that, please reach out. It is harder to qualify than a lot of people think, but
yeah, like I think we just had a deal fall through, right?
Actually had two deals fall through with people that you would not expect the deals to fall through.
Well, a lot of it's just like the number. It's not really the borrowers. Like it's just the numbers of the deals. Like, and you know, bond yields just rallied again yesterday. Yeah. It's like, and Minister Fraser, actually, I was surprised that he really like understood that. Not like that it surprised me, but it was just like, it was refreshing to see how well he understood this in depth, where he's like, it's a problem if people are applying for something and they don't know what the rate is going to be in 6 months. Like that's the biggest challenge with CMHC, because if you're in an increasing rate environment, that's going to present.
What if I told you I'll buy your house, but I'll pay you the price
right
6 months from now? You'd be like, you know,
well, yeah.
think about price differences in the last couple of years that we've seen, the volatility in you know, even just a quarter, right? Yeah. So it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So the last piece to kind of supercharge that piece is that they issued the Canada Mortgage Bonds, which is basically CMHC guaranteed bonds are sold to investors to generate funds for residential mortgage financing. In September 2023, the annual limit for CMBs was increased from $40 billion to $60 billion. This new measure is expected to get up to 30,000 more rental apartments built per year. It probably will do that. It probably will. But to me, I do think that this comes as a consequence, and we're going to see this in the budget that comes out today. We're recording this episode April 16th. It's going to come out quite a bit after that. But there's a high cost to doing that, because they're going to be the government is buying all of those bonds to keep rates down. It's functionally like a yield curve control on Canada mortgage bonds, which keeps insured mortgage rates low, which is necessary to solve the housing crisis. But it's a big cost. Like it's not cheap to just buy a bunch of, well, X billion dollars worth of bonds. I think that their annual issuance is $60 billion now, and they're going to be buying 50% of those. Crazy. Minimum 50%. So $30 billion.
And we recently did an episode
No, to be fair, yeah, we did do an episode on this. And to be honest, I got something. I think your friend who was a bond trader made some comments on it. So, and one of the things that I didn't.
That's Ryan O'Mara. Ryan, I know you're a listener. Thanks for always listening and providing your very valuable, complicated insights.
Yeah. So,
bond trader in London, England, and ex-Canadian, watches the Canadian economy closely and always has some really interesting things to say.
Yeah. So, one of the things that I missed was that they are going to, this technically revenue generating what they're doing. It's probably also like, I think that probably that by design, it is going to come with a little bit of that yield curve control element. So, for them to artificially suppress those insured interest rates because they want to try and floor the housing economy or the housing market, sorry. But technically, the government of Canada can sell bonds at whatever, like let's say 3.5 basis points. I think the Canada bond yield is getting close to 4, but, and so they can raise money. Like that's like them taking a mortgage, right? So they get their mortgage rate at 4% and then they issue these CMBs or they buy these CMBs at 4.5. And so technically it's like a carry trade. It'd be like taking a HELOC at 5% or taking a HELOC at 4%, let's say, and lending that money out at 4.5%.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. So they are. So it's technically, it's funny though, because I read all of the stuff, like, because the Bank of Canada did a consultation on this and the government did a consultation on this. Because remember, they were going to can this program. Yeah. Like they were going to stop issuing Canada mortgage bonds. And they, and
quite the turnaround.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, it would have just been catastrophic for housing supply.
Yeah.
And now they've turned it into a revenue generating tool. Basically the banking industry convinced them that this was a good idea. And they're not wrong, honestly. Like I'm not saying this is a bad thing. It's just very expensive. And we have a government that can't really afford to do expensive things right now. That's all I'm saying.
It's been an expensive couple terms.
Yeah, let's see if they hit the wealth tax.
Yeah.
Today, because that's what I heard the big reveal in the budget's going to be.
Oh, geez. And we'll do a full episode on that at some point.
How to accumulate enough wealth so that you get to hit the wealth tax.
Yeah, I want to know that one. Final thing, and then we'll get out of here. GST exemption in September 2023. The federal government committed to removing the goods and services tax on all new qualifying rental housing construction. So we have seen steps in the right direction. We have seen the needle being moved, you know, whatever other analogy you want to put in there for little amounts of progress. We've seen it, and I'm here for it. Have a very long way to go because we are in a pretty bad situation. But with more of this, hopefully more good things will come. Anything else before we get out of here, Dan?
No, I haven't done a video walkthrough on this report, but I likely will for the realist.ca community. So if you want, what I've been doing lately is I've just been putting like basically like 50% of the video like reports that I do on YouTube. So if you want to see like kind of the first half of it, you can. It'll be public. And then I'll do the remaining half like inside of our realist.ca community. Awesome. As sort of like a thank you for all of the people who have joined that.
Yeah, just a little bit of that exclusive content, right? You get exclusive content in there and you get the ability to network with everybody. There's talk deals to us on happening there. Basics. Yeah.
Like we have group coaching, masterminds, exactly. Little pop-up sessions.
Deal workshops, yeah. Where we
connecting people audits. Like, you know, we have like a listener, Dane, who's like a beauty, and yeah. And he's been connecting with Nia about like different funds that CMHC has for,
yeah.
I think it was like there's a Black Entrepreneurs Fund that CMHC has that, yeah. Nia and Dane are like doing work over. Like there's so many opportunities that like we can't even see all of them. And
that's
and, like,
why our we're community, part of the community too.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Like that. So yeah, really cool. Check it out, realist.ca. We're having a free webinar coming up as well. realist.ca/webinar. It'll be on May 8th.
May 8th. Yeah. So I EST. Think this comes out before that. So,
hopefully.
And if it doesn't, guess what? That's still going to be available afterwards for Realist members. So go ahead and check that out.
Yeah. And we're going to do webinars on a monthly basis. So if there's a topic that you want us to do a webinar on, just
reach
let
out,
us know.
Yeah, reach out, yeah. Request, slide into one of our DMs, hit the show email. Or join the group and start posting in there and say, hey, this is what I want to see next.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. As always, all the best, and we will see you soon. The Canadian Real Estate Investor Podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and it is not financial advice. Nick Hill is a mortgage agent with Premier Mortgage Center and a partner in the G&H Mortgage Group. License number 10317. Agent license M210040037.
Daniel Foch is a real estate broker licensed with Rare Real Estate, a member of the Canadian Real Estate Association, the Toronto Real Estate Board, and the Ontario Real Estate Association.